Terekuf Tzadigimel. Rabbi Nezal says, Da, you should know, Shehamachshava Yeshla Toikef Godoil. A person's mind has tremendous power. Im Yechazek V'yigbar Machshavtoi Aleizadov Shebo'ilam. If a person will strengthen his mind, will concentrate his mind on any item in the world, Yuchal Lefoil Sheyihiyakach, the person will be able to accomplish that such and such should happen. Whatever he wants to happen should happen. Even if a person would concentrate very hard that he should get money, certainly the person will get money. This applies to anything. But the kind of concentration we're talking about here has to be a concentration where a person removes all physical feeling. And this reminds me of this thing that somebody mentioned recently about some kind of show or a movie where it showed this guy being taken into the army and he had to carry, he had to hold two pails of water or something, and the guy concentrated hard enough that he wasn't able to feel. The guy was concentrating on a fabulous experience that he had, and he concentrated well enough that he literally removed, he didn't physically feel the pain. In other words, this was a pain which after 3-4 minutes, it's physically not possible to endure. This person was able to do it for an hour, for whatever time it was, without any problem. Why? Because he literally, what they must have shown was exactly what Rabbeinu is now saying here, that it's conceivable to concentrate on a level where you nullify any physical feeling. Rabbeinu Zal says, the power of concentration is so powerful to the point where it's possible for a person to be meiser nefesh mentally, literally to kill himself mentally. It's possible for a person to feel the physical pain of death. How? By a person accepting upon himself in his mind that he's willing to be meiser nefesh al kiddush Hashem with whatever misa he depicts. In other words, for example, let's say a person conjured up a picture in his mind of a strangulation death, where he pictures physically two people standing there, they wrap a rope around his neck, and both are pulling. And he pictures the physical act, he concentrates well enough in his mind, he pictures the physical thing happening, making believe that it's tightening and getting tighter and tighter and tighter till he can't breathe, and tighter, pulling, it's killing him. And he's conjuring up this picture mentally via concentration. Rabbeinu Zal says, the efshel lechazik ulegaber hamachshava kol kach ad shebisho shebekabel b'machshavtoi shemarutzalim sernafshoi lomas al kiddush Hashem azai yargish tzar hamiso mamish, to the point where it's possible for a person to concentrate so hard that at the time that he's accepting upon his mind that he's willing to be meiser nefesh, he literally feels the physical pain of death taking place. Period. This is what Rabbeinu Zal says. Right.
It's a fact. Okay?
100%. Rabbeinu Zal is saying this as positive fact, that if a person would literally concentrate his mind, but really concentrate, we're talking about concentration where he eliminates any physical fear, literally everything.
Everything else.
100%. Rabbeinu Zal said he will get money or anything else he would put his mind to, literally.
Listen.
Yes.
I remember the shiur on Wednesday night. Rabbi Zal said, I don't know exact words, word for word, said those Jewish people that burned, literally burned to death in the concentration camps, never felt pain. And he says he believes it with the Munna Shleiman. They never felt the slightest pain because they had a move.
Right. They died with a feeling of Mesiras Nefesh. For sure. Rabbeinu Zal says, V'zeh she'omar Rabbi Akiva. Now Rabbeinu Zal is going to analyze a little bit better this Gemara that people quote many times. Rabbeinu Zal is going to really clarify it a little bit. This is what Rabbi Akiva said. Kol yomai hoyisi mitzayir al posuk zeh mosayov eliyodi vakaymeno. when they were taking Rabbi Akiva out to be killed, his Talmidim said to him, Rabbi, why don't you put an end to this? They knew that he could have put an end to this. How? If he would just say a few words in the Shema, if he would allow himself not to stop at Echad, not to concentrate so hard at the words Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, that his neshama would leave him, but if he would just hold out and let it go a little further and say the words V'yohavta Es Hashem Aleikecha, the last letters of Es Hashem Aleikecha have in them the most powerful name of Hashem for destroying the Goyim. It's the name of Hashem, Tav Chav Hei, which the Arizal brings. That's the name that Hashem uses, Lahavir Gilulim in Haaretz, to remove, to destroy all Avodah Zarah from the world, all the Goyim. That's the name that Moshe Rabbeinu used to kill the Mitzri, Tav Chav Hei. That's a name of Hashem, Tav Chav Hei. Rosha Lomo Sake Reyecha. If you recall, when Moshe Rabbeinu killed the Mitzri, the next day he said he saw Dothan and Aviram fighting, and he said to them, Rosh Olam Asaka Reyecha. They said to him, Halaharageini Atalimir, are you saying what you just said to kill us, like you killed the Mitzri? The Arizal says, What? What did he just say to kill? What did he just say? He said this magic word, Sakya. And the Arizal explains that that's a name of Hashem that's used to wipe out enemies. The Arizal says we find many times in the Gemara. Exactly. Within the Shem Ayin Beis of Hashem, there is a name of Hashem which consists of 72 three-letter words. And one of those 72 three-letter words is Tav Chav Hei. That's the first letters of Kol HaNeshama Tehalel Ko Haleluko. That's the Tehalel. Kol HaNeshama Tehalel. And the two Yamin Tovim in which the Yidden inflicted the most destruction upon the Goyim, Chanukah and Purim. Chanukah and Purim are Bigimatria Tav Chav Hei. Plus the Arizal says when we say in Yoshe B'Seser Elyon, we say about Hashem, Rak bi'einecho sabit v'shinumas rishon tira. Hashem, all you have to do is take one look with your eyes, and we see the rishon getting paid instantly. Why? What magical power is there in that look? The Arizal says the word tabit, rak bi'einecho sabit, tof beis yud tes, with the four letters, is bigimatria tof chof hei. Again, it's this name of Hashem that's always used to destroy the goyim. The Arizal says this is Merumas when we say V'alkein mekavel Hashem alikenu, therefore we hope to Hashem lirois mehera b'sefer suzecha, to get to see quickly the beauty of Hashem's strength lahavir gilulim in haaretz, to remove all avodah zarah, all tumah, all goyim from the world. With what power? The last letters of lirois mehera b'sefer suzecha. Again, this name of Hashem, this holy name of Hashem, Tav Chav Hei, which is the name with which Hashem strikes out at the Rishon. Mm-hmm.
Mister?
Yeah?
Was there a point in which King David used it against his enemies, Tav Chav Hei?
It doesn't say. I don't think so. But the Arizal says that this is the site. Now we can understand the Gemara. The Gemara says that Rabbi Akiva was standing there. He was starting to say Shema, and his Talmidim said, Rabbi, why are you standing for this? Why don't you wipe out all the Goyim? So he said to them, are you kidding? I have this opportunity now to be Moisa Nefesh, and I'm going to pass it up. So the Gemara says that he said Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, and his neshama left him at the word Echad. The Arizal says, explain, there's missing pieces to the puzzle here. What did they mean when they said, Rebbe, why are you standing for it? What should he have done? Sit for it? In other words, how could he have destroyed them? And how was his saying of Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad show that he didn't follow through? What's the whole explanation? The Arizal says, because this name of Hashem is found in the Shema also. When we say the words of Yohavta, Es Hashem Aleikecha, the last letters there are Tav Chav Hei also. And the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva, he had taught them the Chochmah of Kabbalah. They knew that he was a great enough tzaddik, that if he said those words and if he was mechaven for that shame, the whole Roman army would have been wiped out.
So
in 1 second. Because we're going to see in a minute why he didn't do it. That's what Rabbi Nezal is going to explain now. Rabbi Nezal says, V'seshom Rabbi Akiva, this is what Rabbi Akiva said, Kol yomai hoyisi mitzayir al posuk zeh mosayovo iliyodi vakaymenu. My whole life I suffered about this posuk. When would I be zeichet to accomplish this item, being moser nefesh, saying the words Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad with mesiras nefesh. Achshav, now that I got the opportunity, I'm going to pass it up. Rabbein Azal explains, Hainu, Shebishas Kriyashma, when Rabbi Akiva used to say Kriyashma every day, Shehoya Rabbi Akiva Mekabel Alatzmai Dalet Nisus Bezn, Rabbi Akiva used to do what the Shulchan Aruch says to do, that when a person says the Dalet of Echod, one of the items that a person is supposed to be Mechavan at that point, is that he's accepting upon himself the Dalet Nisus Bezn, Skila, Sreifa, Hereg, and Chenek. And he's supposed to picture in his mind, literally, physically having those things happen to him.
Everybody, what?
Nothing, regardless. The Shulchan Aruch says that each and every single Jew, when he says the Shema, is supposed to say it with Mesiras Nefesh, as though he's accepting upon himself, he's saying Hashem.
But he's already there.
Who says he didn't do? Nobody knows if he didn't. Nobody knows if they didn't do. We say that if in any way I merit any of these four deaths, I'm willing to accept it upon myself. Mm-hmm. And the person conjures up in his mind a picture as though Skila is being thrown off a building and they're throwing these big stones at his head and it's hitting his head and he's bleeding and everything. Picturing up each one of these deaths, the Sreifa swallowing a hot piece of lead and feeling this item burning out, literally burning out the internal organs. Mm-hmm. Rabbi Nizal says, right. So when Rabbi Akiva used to say Kriya Shema, he used to accept upon himself the Dalet Nisus Bezn, Ho yemekabel al atzmoi mesiras nafshoi b'machshovo chazoko utkifo kazu. He used to accept upon himself mesiras nefesh with such concentration, with such powerful concentration, at sheho yemetztayar, where he suffered umargish mamish yisurei hamiso mamish. And he felt the actual pain of death, meaning ke'ilu cyclin v'soyrfinoisoy mamish b'lishum hefresh. He felt the physical pain as though they were throwing these stones at him or giving him this death penalty of sreifa. He concentrated so well on this that he actually felt physical pain at that time. That kind of physical pain. This is why he said the words kol yomai hoyisi mitzta'er. My whole life I used to suffer, mosayovoi, meaning, Rabbi Nizal says, hainu, mima sheshi'arti v'kibalti bedati, mosayovoi li'oli v'akaymenu limsar nafshi al-kiddush Hashem, from this that I evaluated in my mind, and I accepted in my mind, when will I be zeicha to accept these Dalet Nisus Bezn, from that mizeh levat, from that thought alone, hoyisi mitzta'er umargish v'soyvel yisur hamisa mamish kanal. In other words, note where Rabbi Nizal is putting the comma in his words. Kol yamai hoyisi mitzta'er, comma, my whole life I used to suffer over what? Because I used to do so well this item of mosayovel yod yakemeno that actually brought on such pain, like I was actually going through the physical death. Now that I was given the opportunity to physically have this done on to me, and I won't do it. My whole life I used to feel this precise pain from mentally accepting these deaths upon myself. This was Rabbi Akiva's statement. Therefore, now that the opportunity presents itself, don't think I'm afraid at all of the pain of this kind of death or anything. I have already, on a daily basis, accepted this kind of pain upon myself when I said the tefillah of Kriya Shema with such mesiras nefesh. Period. Now, 1 minute. When we finish, we'll have questions. Rabbi Nizal says now, ukishemachazik hamachshova b'mesiras nefesh kol kach kanal. If a person concentrates his mind on mesiras nefesh to this type of extent that we're describing, yuchal lomos mamish mizeh hatzar. A person can actually physically die from this pain, ki'ilu hoyameis misa mizu amisa b'poyal, as though he were dying this death in physical form. Ki ein hefresh bein hamisa b'poyal lahatzar shemargish mehamisa b'machshava kanal. Rabbi Nizal says there is no difference whatsoever between the physical death and the kind of suffering, the kind of pain that a person can feel if he concentrates hard enough on accepting this type of death upon himself mentally. Al kein, therefore, Rabbi Nizal extends a warning. Tzorich leminoya ulaharchik atzmoy, a person has to hold back and to hold himself distant, not to allow himself to remain in that state for too long a period of time. When the person feels his nefesh actually starting to leave him, he's got to be careful to pull out fast enough, to break the concentration fast enough. Otherwise, it could result in a physical death. So that a person should not pass away before his right time.
I look at the person. Think he's
going to
die, so he shouldn't think about these things?
No. Rabbeinu is saying that when a person says Shema, as is brought in Shulchan Aruch, as is brought in Sefer Musar, a person has to accept upon himself that Aleph Nisan is Bezdin. Rabbeinu says, you want to know what this means? It means literally a person has to concentrate very, very hard and conjure up in his mind an image that one of these types of deaths, or all four of them, are literally being carried out on him. And Rabbeinu Zal says that it's possible through the power of concentration to concentrate so hard to the point where the body will actually experience the pain of that physical type of death, and it could, chas v'shalom, result in a physical death. Because the neshama starts leaving, literally. It feels that crashing internally and starts to recede, chas v'shalom, starts to leave. Exactly. Rabbeinu Zal says, therefore, you should know that this is an item that you're required to do, but with a caution attached to it. Because you're not supposed to take your own life before the right time. Period. Now what?
Okay. When the Rabbeinu says that that the power of concentration is so great it can cause something to happen.
Right.
Now, remember in Sichas Saran, the example that they gave was, he said that, in other words, the question is it that you can force a physical thing to happen? That's one thing. But then, one of the examples that Rabban Zon gives is the thing with Shulchan Aruch. It says, for example, if you figure out, you can figure out that by doing 5 pages a day, you can finish Shulchan Aruch in a year.
Correct.
Now, I don't understand what that is an example of. In other words, that's an example of calculating, not of forcing
anything
to be done.
No, it's an example of forcing. In other words, you have a person whom 50 people who know this person, and the person who knows himself, will testify that this guy could never accomplish a task like this. Let's break it in much simpler terms, jogging. Let's put Shulchan Aruch aside, Lahavdol, for a second. Let's talk about a person jogging. You get a person who goes out one morning, he's never jogged before in his life, he goes jogging on the boardwalk. He jogs 3 blocks, and he can't move. And somebody says, you jog another block, I'll give you $100. He jogs another half a block and he physically collapses, he faints. You know, that's it. He loses that $100. We know that this guy's potential is 3.5 blocks or 4 blocks. The next day he sits down and learns this Torah, and he's told about the power of concentration. That if you concentrate, if you lock your mind into something, and you concentrate that no matter what, I'm going to get to there. And you don't think about any, you blot out any other thought from your mind. There's no legs attached to me, there's no hands, there's no street, it's not raining, nothing. Just concentrating on that pole that's all the way on the other end of the boardwalk, and I'm running all the way there. Rabbeinu Zal saying that you'll see this person with whom you saw proof yesterday, you saw what his maximum is, you'll see him go 8 times past his maximum via the power of concentration, period. Rabbeinu Zal gives the analogy about a person with Shulchan Aruch, with learning. A person can set a goal in his mind, and if he locks in hard enough on it, we're not talking about the calculation aspect, nothing. No, you got sidetracked.
That's what I understand. Why?
He happens to mention the example of doing a calculation, knowing it'll take this long, and then lock your mind in that there's no way in the world I can get out of this. And it's possible via concentration for this person who never learned for 3 days straight, he never kept up a kviyas more than 3 days, suddenly he'll go zooming, go all the way. Okay. That's what he's saying.
So the whole thing is the power of concentration.
Exactly.
Can accomplish any goal that you set.
Exactly. That's the first sentence in this Torah. Dash ha'machshava yesh lo toikif gadol. That if yechazik v'yigbar machshavto yal eizet ha'o sheboilam, yuchal lefoil sheyeh kach. As impossible as it is for him, physically or spiritually, he can lock his mind in that it shall happen and it'll happen.
Example also for the stock market.
Definitely.
Yeah, I was gonna say,
that's the example that Rebbe Zal gave. It's not Rebbe Zal doesn't mention the word stock market.
Yeah, because
he's using the example that Rebbe Zal says here about even money, where a person could invest money in something and concentrate, lock in his mind the thought that this item is going up. I'm going to hear that this item is going, and lock his mind well enough on it to the point where I'll make it physically happen. May here again note, a person being given this advice may have a choice. Take this advice and use it on pebbles, or take this advice or use it for gold and diamonds. A person giving this advice, a person starts thinking about stock market. This picture, if a person applies this to the question and lock your mind that you're going to start running and you're not going to stop, in the right direction, that kind of thing. Person has to know what it's better to apply this to. Although Rabbeinu Zal established this as fact as far as Ruchnius or Gashmius, no question at all.
Listen, I remember on that same tape that he told that Rabbeinu Zal gave him the stock market, he also said if you're before a firing squad, you concentrate enough, the soldiers who are aiming their
That's
gun,
another pull, example pull that Rabbeinu Zal gave. That's an example that Rabbeinu Zal gave, that it's possible for a person to concentrate well enough. Person is standing in front of a gun and the other guy says, I'm going to shoot you. And it's possible for a person via machshava to concentrate well enough that this is not going to happen. But again, note what kind of machshava we're talking about. Mevatel his hergish. Where if you would pinch him on the leg, at that minute he wouldn't feel it. If it would start raining, he wouldn't feel it. Now we know that there does exist such an item. We have a story in Kirch Beor of Naftali Zal. I was once davening Shmoneh Esrei and a fire broke out in the house. And they were moving things, nothing. He didn't hear, he didn't see, he didn't feel physically. Talking about a power, and even each person knows that he's done this. You watch kids, Leia sometimes comments. We see the kids sitting over there watching TV. You call their name, they don't hear you. They're locked in on their low level, they're locked in on something, and nothing, everything else. If you would tap them lightly on the foot, they wouldn't feel it. Physical feel, we're talking about a physical hargish, they wouldn't feel it.
Just two questions. One thing is that does Rabbeinu Zal explain here how to achieve this?
No.
Okay.
But in other words,
life and tefillah, obviously,
number
I don't
one.
Know, but isn't there a mental type of practice?
Exactly. This is what you concentrate. In other words, this is a mental exercise. No, in other words, he's not saying that this is something that only one person on earth can do. Obviously, this is something that could be done. He was saying this b'chlal to the world. Should know that there exists a concept of teikif of a machshava.
Does this mean that the Rebbe is not
That's another way of saying it. Ein davar ami b'chnei arot saying that there's nothing that stands in the way of willpower. That's another type of phrase that conforms with this. But I'm telling you again that here he's saying something different. He's talking about a certain kind of locking something into your mind. And if you accept it solidly enough in your mind, you can actually make your physical organs go surpass, what you know your physical maximum is.
This is more than just willpower. We're talking about physically boring, like acting results in boring a hole through a wall or something like
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
So it's not just a rut sign, it's not like you have a willpower.
I said that's another form of it. But what's involved here, it takes a willpower to apply yourself.
It's like a supernatural force. 100%. I remember when you gave the Shulchan Aruch Shiurim, he said you should concentrate that you're standing before a firing squad and that they're shooting a bullet, but you should concentrate that you're giving your life up to the point of getting killed.
Exactly.
You said up to the point, maybe he inquired, because if you would concentrate that hard,
it could happen. Could physically, you could fit your neshama could physically explain
that. That's what he implied?
Could be, very possible.
Just one more thing. In the example they gave with Rabbi Akiva, what was he mitzvah over? He was worried about when death would come?
No way. He wasn't, no
not
worry.
Not,
no,
I'm not worried.
He was saying, clear my hoisi mitzvah. No. My whole life, I used to suffer.
Suffering.
I used to feel the type of suffering that's about to take place here. You know how I used to feel it? Over, because I used to concentrate on Mosayo, I used to concentrate on when am I going to be Zeche to see, and I'm going to say Shema Yisrael Hashem Kena Hashem Echad. So I used to feel the kind of suffering that they're planning on inflicting on me now physically. In other words, that's where Rabbeinu Zal interprets these words differently from the normal accepted pshat.
He used to be mitzayer because he was always trying to picture his mind.
He used to feel the physical suffering of death via picturing in his mind, when will I be able to accept upon myself?
Did Rav Nassim Zal write about his experiences when he was in prison? Because in prison you have the scum of the earth, you know?
He writes a little about it in Alam LaTruth of Rav Nassim Zal was put in the prison for a few years, and he writes a little of what went on there, how there were certain times where he screamed. He writes of certain experiences where he started screaming, and these murderers got scared of him and they backed off. And there were times when they were
in jail. The Muslim or the
Rav Nassim's main time? No.
Rav Nassim's
was put into prison.
What about Rabbi Nissen when he was in Russia, he was put in Siberia.
We mentioned some things, if you recall, when he was there that time for Shavuos. We mentioned some of the things that went on.
Is there any like a Hezbo? How does this work? In other words, a person, it says a person machshava creates malachim.
Right.
That's what makes this thing. In other words.
Oh, you're asking, in his mind, does he create? No. Nothing to do with malachim.
So machshava creates malachim.
Nothing to do with malachim.
So how does it happen?
Rabbeinu Zal didn't mention the word malachim. I'm not going to mention it. Rabbeinu Zal says the machshava has, in other words, how did Hashem create the world? With dibur, right? The Zohar Kodesh says before anything can take place, there's a three-step procedure: machshava, dibur, and maaser. Right? Rabbeinu Zal seems to be implying here that the machshava alone has power when exercised powerfully enough to zing into Maisa, to actually cause the Maisa to happen. Hashem says, Ma ano, just like I created heaven and earth with my Dibur, Bnei Yisrael also have a power to create heaven and earth with Dibur. V'lemor l'tzion ami ato. The Pasuk says, Hashem says to Tzion, you are my nation. The Zohar Kodesh says, Al tikri ami elo'imi. Hashem says, don't read it the word my nation, you are with me. V'lemor l'tzion ami ato. Ma ano ivri shmayava ara b'minuli, just like I create heaven and earth with my dibur, the Jews also create heaven and earth with the dibur. So we see that the Yidden are given a koyach of brita, a koyach to create.
How come if that's the case, how come every time there's a war in Israel, how come the whole Jewish nation doesn't do that, should do it?
Good question. How come when there's no war in Israel, how come before the war comes, why don't people stop all the childishness,
right,
and all the moronicness and all these silly politics and just sit down together and join hands and start being a little religious? We're not asking for a lot. Shabbos.
Mm-hmm.
Let each moron idiot close his door and go out and bathe in the sun on Shabbos. Not do any work, not do any kind of sin. We'll have Mashiach very fast. The answer is why? Because it's not the right time.
I wanted to ask you, what was Rabbeinu Zal saying in effect? That a Jew is not allowed to say, I'm a victim of circumstances, that's really atheism?
Exactly. Here he's emphasizing very much that a person has a weapon that he's not aware of, and it's an unbelievably powerful weapon. That's his power of concentration.
My brother realized from Israel that a month ago, I had a stand and there was no rain. So he asked the government asked Ed Chareda to misspell for rain.
Right.
So it rained. But the next day they said, don't pray for rain because the weatherman said, I won't rain, I can't rain. And they prayed anyway and it rained again also.
Mm-hmm. Very possible.
On this card, we see something, we see from Rabbi Kiva that a person, like, I don't understand, why should a person, if Rabbi Kiva is smashed, he could have lived if
right,
he wanted to.
Right, definitely.
So he could have saved, that, like it says, whenever the tzaddikim die, it was Hashem tzarek aviyot.
It says also that when a tzaddik passed away, that's one of the greatest simcha, like simcha's passion. Because Kaviyochel in heaven, they're getting, in other words, we're losing something and they're getting something. That's the way it's described. So in some ways, it is a nachas, Hashem.
How come the Hasidim like a chayim when it came from the Rebbe? When you wear that, the Hasidim, when the Rebbe dies,
right,
and the sun takes over,
right,
make a chayim by the kavura,
The answer is Bechlal, not just by Rebbe, but even at any type of yard site.
Mm-hmm.
When they go to a Tzinoin, let's say at a yard site, they bring along Lachaim, because the Baal Shem Tov was the one who emphasized this more than anyone else, that one of the greatest tikkunim that a person can do for a person who passed away is to make a bracha in his name. Make a bracha on food. That's one of the highest things that you can do.
Why is that wooden Kaddish or something?
The answer is, it's not really explained. In a way, it is explained, because that brings about a tikkun for a neshama. In other words, that brings about literally an aliyas neshama of the neshama of the item and the food. So it could be, because you're doing it to this item, it affects it so much more for the one whom you had in mind to help with.
This is a physical item.
Exactly. Exactly.
Mentioned as far as the kavana for the arba mises within Echa and the Shema.
Right.
How does that fit in with the other kavanas? Now, is it supposed to be afterwards? Let's say for the Dalin. What are the? Could you just explain for a minute?
Two basic things for the Dalin. One is the fact that Hashem rules in all four corners of the world, and the second is the Dalin mises.
Second. Picture yourself on the going.
Yeah. Rebbe Zal mentioned, number one, if a person can, to conjure up a vision of all four, otherwise to at least one, and it doesn't have to be one of the physical four nieces person. Could be a person standing opposite him with a gun. Person.
For punishment for your other?
Exactly. But anything that you might have done wrong in this Gilgal and any previous Gilgal, anything at all.
So, what about from Machshava? Could somebody, if he's about to die, could he's, with his Machshava, say, if he's supposed to die in a month, with his Machshava?
Most definitely.
Why don't we see that today physically?
Have you know if anybody had tried it, and if they know? Very simple. People don't do it. At that point in time, they become weak. They don't, people, a person doesn't.
The story where Rabbi Zal said he once concentrated all night with the Eretz Yisrael. He didn't use the word he davened all night. He said he said he davened.
He took out, I think, he said almost something.
I don't know. He had mentioned at another time also that it was just concentrating.
I'm concentrating on a ticket.
But he lost the ticket when they put the
still,
ticket.
Yeah.
But still,
somebody.
No, but when they got back to his house, he said he had in his mind that he wasn't going to leave his desk until something happened.
But I remember he said the word concentrate. You know,
yeah. I think he took out a helmet.
I don't know.
What happened?
I don't know. Whatever it is. And what happened? In other words, this was his situation. This was his second trip to Eretz Yisrael. And there was a lottery going on at the time. Three tickets to Eretz Yisrael. That was the prize. And Rabbi Zal said he knew that he wanted to go to Eretz Yisrael more than any other person in the world. And, you know, he bought the ticket, and then when they had the lottery, he went there for the drawing, and he sat there, and he said he was concentrating with every ounce of energy that he had in him, that the ticket that they're going to pull out of there is going to be his. And the guy put his hand there, he concentrated, pulled it out, and Rabbi Zal got up and started walking, and it wasn't his. And he felt sort of devastated. Yeah, really. He saw the guy who got up to get the ticket. Said, I was going to go anyway. You know, or I don't even know if I'll be able to go. Or
he
something
said
like.
He went there four times already.
I was there for You know, some guy made some kind of negative. Maybe he's always like shattered. You know, but he put so much effort into it. He said he went home that night and couldn't reconcile it in his own mind. There was no way in the world he was going to give up this trip. He said he sat down by his desk. He started concentrating tremendously, and I think he mentioned that he took out a tehillim and he started davening, you know, with full power of concentration. He made up his mind, he was not giving up, no matter what. And he said this went on for a couple of hours, and then like about 2:00 in the morning, there was a knock at his door. He opened the door, a guy came in, put the ticket down on the desk and walked out.
You serious?
Yeah. This is what Rabbi Rosenfeld's.
He didn't ask anything,
nothing at all whatsoever. This was a physical and serious attack.
The person was a paid ticket.
Yeah. Plain
so ticket.
Well.
No.
I don't know if he said that person specifically, but he said it was a knock on the door. He got up, his desk, I was in that apartment at the time, his desk was right near the door. He got up, he opened the door, he handed it, the person walked in, he got the ticket down on the desk and walked out.
You know, that was his second trip to Eretz Yisrael.
I remember Rabbi Zal was saying, so I heard him say it more than once, that once, you know, when he was young, Rabbi Bakazal was very sick, and the doctor said in a few months or a year or two he would pass away. And instead, the doctor, about a year or two, dropped dead, and Rabbi Bakazal was 67 years old.
Yeah.
That's my thing at the age of 94.
Yeah, yeah.
True. Let's go.
About that incident that the Rebbe said, that he saw Rebbe Zal that day when it happened. That she came in, she knew not to bother him. He came in with his face
very tense.
Very tense.
Okay, let's go. Torah Kuf Tzadik Dalet. Rabbeinu Zal says, "Mi sheroise kovoid hu sheiter." A person who wants kavod is a fool. Kilamoshel, because for example, Rabbi Nizal says, Sar Godoil Sholach Pokid Leirechot Mehayore Sheloi Lamokan Rochai. There was a very great general, let's say, who sent one of his officers, let's say a lieutenant or whatever, to a city, to one of the cities that was under his control, in a very distant place. This lieutenant who was sent there, he took all the kavod for himself. In other words, he established himself in that city as though he were a general, period. He told them that I'm the leader, not just of this city, I'm the leader of the whole country and everything, etc., etc. Ki ho arelim lo yodu shehu eved hasar. The goyim there, the idiots there, didn't know that he was a servant of the general, that he was just a servant of the general. V'savru shehu ba'atzmai hasara. They thought, they were under the impression that he was the actual general. U'kisho yitzrichem elav, when they needed anything from him, mahayu neiflon lefnei raglov, they used to fall before his feet. V'naisen lai kol hakavod, and they used to give him all the honor due to a big general, or a king even. V'hayu kairen oisayim kol hakinuyim shel kavod hashayochem lasar. And they used to refer to him with all the types of titles that would be given to an actual general or king, his majesty, you know, that type of terminology. Pam echod, one time, bo hasar bi'atzmei l'shon, the general himself, or the king himself, showed up in that city, o bo ha'pokid l'fonov, and this lieutenant, who was till now the leader, you know, the great majesty in this place, came before the actual king. And the king asked them about certain things about the country, why these people aren't doing their work properly. And the real king summoned one policeman there, and the real king, whom we're saying, started asking this policeman about certain things that go on in the city. This policeman didn't recognize the real king at all. He only recognized this lieutenant as his majesty and everything. And right away he bowed down, he fell to the feet of the lieutenant. And he gave him all the kavod that really should have been given to his boss, which was the actual king. And he replied about the question that the other one had asked him. Then the face of this lieutenant turned black like the bottom of a pot. You got a pot that's really burned on bottom, turned black like that. And he was tremendously embarrassed. There couldn't be any worse kind of embarrassment than this. That in front of the real king, they're showing him this kind of respect. It looked so ridiculous, you know, so insane, such a silly kind of thing. Rabbi Nizal says, "Kemoi came, so too, Iker hakovoid hurak mehadibur." The main respect that's shown to a person is only through his dibur. Because you take any other organ of the body, like the hand, it's not possible to show respect to a person's hand. Ki gam einai nikar b'hayad b'yatzmo tavnes odom. Because in the hand, there is not recognizable the form of the person, number one. V'chein afilu p'nei ha'odom einai miyuchad l'odom b'yatzmo. And even the face of a person, the actual image of a human face, even that's not so specifically for people. Ki nimtza gam chaya sheyesh lo p'nei odom. Because there are also animals that have some type of facial resemblance to a human. Ki goyim koif, like a monkey. Ve'ein ze geder ha'odom. So that's not either. You wouldn't either call the face the geder of Odom. Therefore, a person does not receive kavod only via his dibur. That's what distinguishes man from animal. And therefore, because the main respect that's shown to a person is because of his dibur, v'hadibur hu heichal hamelech, the dibur is called the throne room of the king, ki heichal begematria adni. The word heichal, which means throne room, is begematria adni, bechinas hadibur. That name of Hashem adni refers to dibur, to speech. Kemo shekosav, as the pasuk says, Hashem sefosai tiftoch. Aleph dalet nun yud should open up my lips. So we know that that's the name of Hashem that refers to Dibur, and that name of Hashem is the throne room of the king. Im kein, if that's the case, roitza lekabel kovoid beheichal hamelech. So when a person receives any type of respect, what he's actually receiving respect for is his Dibur. His Dibur is the heichal hamelech. So in a sense, it's like he's trying to accept kovoid while he's standing in the throne room of the king. Ve'ein bizoyein godel mizeh. There is no embarrassment greater than this, ki yadua b'chush, as is known in physical life. A person would imagine how silly, how ridiculous it would look if he were being shown the kind of respect that should be attributed to the king while he's standing in front of the king. Rabbi Nezal says, "Shebevaday yizbayish ho'eved ma'oid kishiyachlekul loikovet godel lefnei hamelech kanal b'moshlanal." Certainly, a servant would become extremely embarrassed if he was shown the type of respect that's due to his king while he was standing in front of the king. That would be an extremely embarrassing item. So Rabbi Nezal says, a person should know that whoever wants kavod is a fool. Because kavod is generally a very embarrassing item. It should be a very, very embarrassing item. Because generally what the person is being shown kavod for is not his hand or his foot or even his face, it's his dibur. The dibur is the malchus of the person. Malchus is kavod, v'yavai melech ha-kavod. So the main kavod that's being shown to the person is for his dibur. The dibur is also the heichal hamelech. That place, the sfosayim, the Sofo is Bigematria Shechina. Loshoin is Bigematria Shechina. Those are all items that reflect on the Heichal HaMelech, the palace of the king. So it's like, it's as though, in a sense, the person is trying to receive, this slave, this servant of Hashem, is trying to receive Kavod, to accept Kavod, while standing in front of the king. There's nothing sillier or more embarrassing than that. Therefore, Rabbi Nezal says a person has to train himself to feel a repulsiveness towards kavod, to feel a dislike and not to want it. In other words, Nisha Roitzagod is Shaita, which means that the less that you want this item, the more normal you are.
After the mouth, is that showing the presence of Hashem?
That's the place where the person is being given kavod for. When we give kavod to a person, what are we giving him kavod for? His hands? No. The kavod that's given to a person is generally over his mouth, is his koyach hamemshala. His malchus is his mouth. So when we give him any kind of respect, it's being directed at his dibur. Dibur is also the heichal hamelech. Because the name of Hashem that reflects on Dibur, Aleph Dal Nun Yud, is Begematria Heichal. It stands for Heichal Melech. So Rabbi Nezal says, conceptually, in a sense, it's as though any kavod that's being given to you, which is being given to you for your mouth, is being given to you while you're standing in a Heichal Melech. Imagine how embarrassing that is, how ridiculous that is, how dopey that looks.
Oh, you're standing by your mouth. That's what it is?
Deep.
I know what's bothering
him. What's bothering him?
What does Rabbeinu Zalman have to come on to this that, in other words, he has to explain deeper why the person is given cover? He should just say that we're in Hashem's presence all the time anyway. So
No.
That's not the point. The point is, when kavod is being given to a person, where at what is it being directed?
To his mouth.
To his dibur, period. The mouth, not physically. We're not talking about physically open your mouth, brush your teeth. Nothing to do with that. The concept of mouth is a concept of the Heichal HaMelech. Because Aleph Hashem, Sefosai Tiftach, Aleph Taladon Yod, which is Heichal. The Tikkun Ezra says, that's the Gematria Heichal. That's the palace of the king.
So corresponding to the real Heichal.
That's what it
Doesn't
is.
Doesn't the mouth move the Nishama?
Yes, in a way. Mipiv, das yisuna. From a person's mouth, we get to know what's going on in his brain, which is the neshama.
Does this relate to the thing you mentioned often about the clothing of a person being mouth? Is that a separate concept of mouth?
No, that's an exactly.
Another concept of mouth.
Right. Rabbi Yechon korilei lamane mechadusa.
What if a person has to take cover?
Then Rabbeinu Zal talks about in Torah Vav, that a person has to see to it that any kovoy that's given to him to return it to Hashem. Because that's where Rabbeinu Zal addresses this issue. What about there's a simon in Shulchan Aruch, Hilchos Kivoy Draboy, Hilchos Kibud Avoyim. So there meets Hashem says, accept it. What do I do then if it's such a dangerous item and it's such a ridiculous item? You picture all these insane parents who talk about this Kibud Avoyim. You know what kind of joke that is? You picture you're standing in front of Hashem and your kid is saying, Father dear, you know, can I please get you? Imagine how embarrassing that would be. Each parent should want nothing more than that the kavod should, I don't want any part of it, I hate it, it's silly, it's disgusting, it's ridiculous. Give all the kavod to your Rebbe, and the Rebbe should want all the kavod should be given to Hashem. Again, it's ridiculous. But a person knows that mitzvah halacha, there's certain kavod that he's required to accept. There, Rabbeinu Zal says, whoever is in that position has to see to it, his job is to see to it that he doesn't accept any of the kavod for himself. He accepts it only for Hashem. That's literally the wording that's used there. If you take a look just for a second. No, just a second. Kitzor kol olamayit b'chvod atzmoy ulaharbis b'chvod amokayim. Right. I must have seen it probably in the Mefarshim in the back on that Torah. That's where they really use this technical terminology to see to it that any kavod is given to you right away. In other words, like to see to it shouldn't stay by you for a second or two. The second you get it, in other words, catch it and throw it. That kind of thing. It's like a hot potato. You're playing that game hot potato where you know this is a bomb. This is a live wire. If it goes off, you know, in other words, it's ready to go off any second. If it goes off on your hands, you're finished. Second, you get it, you got to direct it, you got to pass it on.
What does it mean to give it to Hashem when you feel that it's not because of what I gave you?
Exactly. In other words, that twofold, that the respect that's given to me meets the parent. Let's take a parent's role for the same thing. Any respect that, in other words, the fact that I'm allowing the child to say this, the fact that I'm permitting him, is only because Hashem decreed it, not because I want it, not because I get any. I don't allow myself to get any hano. In other words, there's a concept of hano. You got a parent who says, "Yeah, that's real nachas to see a kid who appreciates what was done for them, and they show their appreciation. They went out and bought me a present." And you get another parent who says, "Even that, I don't forgive myself. I want to see to it not to have any hano from their covered." In other words, I know that they don't owe me anything because whatever I've given them, it's not I have nothing to give. But I was an intermediary. Hashem gave. They don't owe me anything. Hashem gave everything. Hashem did everything. Any thanks that they owe to me, they really owe to Hashem. Like Avraham Avinu, people came to him, they ate by his meal, they wanted to say thank you to him. He said, to me, there's no thanks. Say thank you to Hashem. That's how you got that. In other words, same concept by a parent, same concept by a Rebbe. I'm not getting covered. In other words, I don't want any of the, none of the covered should be directed here. I'm just representing Hashem to you, that kind of thing. And yet, very quiet, mitzidam, one has nothing to do with the other. Mitzidam, chas v'shalom, they have to show, at times, more respect. In other words, if there's a choice, you have to be careful not to be mavaza Talmud Chacham more than Hashem. The Gemara says Hashem stands up for the kavod of a Talmud Chacham much, much more than his own kavod. So mitzvah of Talmud, he has to be careful at times, in a sense, his Rebbe comes before Hashem. You picture what we're saying. That's what the Gemara says. And yet, Mitzah the Rebbe, he says he's nothing, really, literally nothing. And all the respect in the world, anything they could do for him, is not going to change what he knows in his own mind and what he feels and what he wants to impart to them, what he wants to impart to them. And yet, he's not allowed to tell them this to the extent where he's going to weaken any of their moira for him. There's a term, moira rabach. In other words, this is where it's a game that has to be played. But again, those who remember Rabbi Zal, you watch how he said both things at the same time. On one hand, many times he would say, you don't owe, in other words, nothing for me. And yet many times there was a hakpada, an incredible hakpada, if there was a certain lack of respect or lack of fear, lack of mayrabo, chas v'shalom. In other words, there was noikim v'noiter kenachosh on certain things, that he took tremendous offense if a person didn't stand up for his kavod at times when he was insulted, or times when the kavod of Rabbeinu Zal wasn't that kind of thing. I'll hold it over here to be continued in session.
Has to be like for Rebbe, like if this story would come up, she has to be that if the subordinate. You have to be embarrassed in front of the real
exactly. That's exactly. In other words, again, if you're taking the kavod to yourself, then you're embarrassed. In other words, then you come out looking so silly when it's being done in front of somebody greater, it looks like such a silly item. If the person originally was not taking any kavod for himself, but when he established himself as ruler in that city, he told him, you should know that any respect you're showing to me is only because of this great one designated me as an authority in this. I'm nobody great. In my own city, I'm nothing. If I go back to my own, to the capital city, I'm one of a thousand. But the Tsar made me the governor of this township here. Now you know I'm the leader. But in other words, they have trained in them. This is what Rebbe Zal said was the difference between him and other manhigim. If you recall the way Rebbe Zal taught his Talmidim, in other words, there's the singing of Meir Rabach and everything. But at the same time, in other words, he could have just taught that in period and never bothered telling the story about the fact that he had a Rebbe. About the fact that he had a Rebbe. And the fact that he told his Talmidim, he went out of the way to stress to them that they should know that they're all Talmidim of his Rebbe. And the fact that he has Rabbonim today. He has ones over him. And there are other manhigim who, when they led their groups, they very casually left out that word. In other words, the fact that that never came up. It just never happened. Not that they said that they don't have a rabbi. They just never said that they did. You know, it was assumed by the four. How did I come into being? Somebody burped and, you know, Hashem burped and I fell out. And that's how you have this great being called me and you all have the benefit of me, you know, et cetera, et cetera. That's what we're talking about. And that's where you see Rebbe Zal was able to take a lot of the kavod off himself, sort of, and yet again, still having to conform with the whole Siman and Yeridea, which has tremendous tight qualifications. You know, certain things that are not permissible. You know, no how, no way. Chas v'shalom.
This Torah that we learned that the person can, the first Torah, the effect things in Moshav, this applied to other people.
Definitely, we're talking about a case with a gun. You can another guy is holding a gun aimed at you. You can concentrate that he shouldn't be able to shoot you.
But can you affect his bechira?
Most definitely. That's what he's showing here. This is what we're talking about. The koyach hamachshava is like a rifle.
Is that his bainanus?
Huh? Exactly. That's another term for it. Although his bainanus generally doesn't mean concentrating on one item, it means thinking about Hashem, thinking about the greatness of Hashem, about wanting to come close, you know, about Hashem, about tachlis, about that kind of item. Whereas this is talking about wedging in, zeroing in on one specific item, locking onto it, and not letting go until the item happens.
And you can combine it in spiders, like, you find that power of
course, 100%.